Welcome to SLP Nerdcast. I'm Kate.
And I'm Amy, and we appreciate you tuning in. In our podcast, we review and provide commentary on resources, literature, and we discuss issues related to the field of speech-language pathology.
You can use this podcast for ASHA CEUs. For more information about us and CEUs, go to our website, www.slpnerdcast.com. SLP Nerdcast is brought to you by listeners like you. Even small contributions keep our CEU prices low and our program ad-free. You can contribute on our website by clicking Support Our Work or find it on our social media pages. You can also find other permanent products, notes, and handouts. Some items are free, others are not, but everything is always affordable. Visit our website to submit a call for papers to come on the show and present with us, or contact us anytime on Facebook, Instagram, or at info@slpnerdcast.com. We love hearing from our listeners, and we can't wait to learn what you have to teach us.
And just a quick disclaimer, the contents of this episode are not meant to replace clinical advice. SLP Nerdcast, its hosts and guests, do not represent or endorse specific products or procedures mentioned during our episodes unless otherwise stated. We are not PhDs, but we do research our material. We do our best to provide a thorough review and a fair representation of each topic that we tackle. That being said, it's always likely that there's an article that we've missed or another perspective that we haven't shared. If you have something to add to the conversation, please email us. We love to hear from you.
I'm so excited for today. It's gonna be great. We get the chance to welcome back two of our most favorite guests. We're not supposed to have favorites. We love all of our guests, but we always have so much fun with you guys. Welcome back, Dr. Trina Spencer and Dr. Ooh. Doug Peterson.
Thank you.
Boo.
You can't boo each other this close to the beginning.
And it begins.
Dun, dun, dun. Trina and Doug, you guys are here to discuss MTSS, which stands for Multi-Tier System of Supports. And we were lucky enough to have Doug and Trina join us once before. If you have not checked out our previous episode on dynamic assessment, please do. Doug and Trina, for our listeners who haven't listened to our previous episode with you, could you just tell us a little bit about yourselves?
Okay, I'll go first. Hi, everyone. I'm Trina Spencer. I'm an associate professor at University of South Florida. I was trained as a school psychologist once upon a time. I'm a board certified behavior analyst. I have a background in special education. I used to be a preschool teacher. I don't know, a bunch of stuff. I'm an affiliate faculty in communication sciences department, but I primarily do research in the Right Path Research and Innovation Center. And my area of interest is multi-tiered systems of supports and everything and anything that goes on in it, which includes designing interventions, implementing interventions, assessments, developing assessment tools, including dynamic assessment, other universal screeners of progress monitoring. Oh my goodness, there's so much there. Anyway, I'll stop. I'll let Doug talk.
Okay, yes. All right, I'm Doug Peterson, and I'm a professor at Brigham Young University. I'm in the Department of Communication Disorders here, and I am a speech-language pathologist. I worked in schools in several states. I was a bilingual SLP. I feel like the bilingual part is fading fast, though. But I did a lot of work.
I was going to ask, you said was.
Yeah, I know. I don't.
Nobody that speaks Spanish to out there?
Right. Not like I used to. So, but anyways, that was a big part of my world, doing assessments in English and Spanish, and doing treatment also in Spanish and English in the schools. I love to research really the same things that Trina loves to research, multi-tiered systems of support for language, for literacy. And just generally in hopeful to change the world.
That's, you know,
nothing big. That's
totally
good.
A reasonable statement. Which you is know, why we love having you.
My new quote about changing the world is, you cannot change the world until you have changed yourself.
Oh, that's a good one. I like that one. Well, I am very excited about today's episode. And admittedly, like I say many times on our little podcast project in here, I don't know much about multi-tiered system and support. So this is going to be it's going to be special to me. I feel like I always love it when I learn an extra little something. And before we get into it, I'm going to quickly read our learning objectives and our financial and non-financial disclosures. Sometimes people do write in and ask us to skip this part. We can't. ASHA requires that we read all of these goodies. So I will try and be quick about it. Learning objective number one, explain why language needs to be included in schools' MTSS efforts or multi-tiered system and supports efforts. Learning objective number two, describe what the purpose of MTSS is and its key features. Learning objective number three, list the characteristics of language intervention and assessment tools necessary for MTSS. Financial and non-financial disclosures. Dr. Peterson and Dr. Spencer, financial relationships. They are co-authors of the Story Champs curriculum and Pearl Dynamic Assessment. They receive royalties from the sales of those items. Dr. Spencer and Dr. Peterson have no financial relationships to disclose, no non-financial relationships to disclose. Kate Granbois, that's me, financial disclosures. I'm the owner and founder of Granbois Therapy and Consulting and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. My non-financial disclosures, I'm a member of ASHA Stig 12 and serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. I'm a member of the Berkshire Association for Behavior Analysis and Therapy, MassABA, the Association for Behavior Analysis International, and the corresponding Speech Pathology and Applied Behavior Analysis Special Interest Group.
Amy's financial disclosures, that's me. I'm an employee of a public school system and co-founder of SLP Nerdcast. And my non-financial disclosures are that I am a member of ASHA, SIG 12, and I serve on the AAC Advisory Group for Massachusetts Advocates for Children. All right, now the good stuff. Trina and Doug, could you please start by just describing what is the multi-tier system of supports? What does that even mean?
Yes. Well, I'll tell you a little bit and then Trina will tell you a little bit.
Fantastic.
Okay, I think a key thing to understand about multi-tiered systems of support is that, or a multi-tiered system of support, is that it's a database decision-making process. And it's driven by data that are gathered through frequent progress monitoring. And then, of course, what is in the name are multiple tiers of support. And those tiers are based on the needs of students. And it's not a dichotomous special education, general education world in this MTSS context.
So I would call MTSS a differentiated instruction and prevention framework in which database decisions are king, right? So I would say the four essential elements of MTSS or characteristics, there are some others that can be input in there, but really we have screening, progress monitoring, multi-tiered instruction and intervention, and then database decision-making through like a problem-solving process. The primary purpose of an MTSS system, right? It's a framework, is to make sure that students of all abilities are getting the dose of instruction they need, the intensity of instruction they need to be successful in school. And it's a prevention model because it's not exactly like the way we deliver special ed services, right? It really is an alternative to the dichotomy of gen ed, special ed traditions. And it's one that, you know, Doug and I have fully embraced since the early 2000s.
I have a question because I don't know anything. And I mean, not only because of that, because just for our listeners who might not have spent a lot of time in the schools, when you say database decision-making, whose database? Is this at a district level? Like who is making these decisions and where is that data coming from?
Yeah, so there's actually MTSS leadership teams, like you can call them whatever you want, and every, you know, maybe a building or a district has a different name for those things. They could be professional learning communities, right? Or it could be grade level leadership teams, right? But there is a team that is responsible for like reviewing the data of the children, right? So let's say it's in an elementary school. You can do MTSS in all levels, but let's say it's an elementary school and you collect screening and progress monitoring data, or let's say screening data in fall, winter, spring. Somebody's got to meet together to look at those data to determine who needs intensified interventions and who's doing just fine, right? So the point is the decision to intensify an intervention is based on the data that are available and that you have collected in a systematic, reliable way. So it's not just willy-nilly, oh, this kid is, you know, cute, so he gets this intervention, and this kid is 4 feet tall, so he gets this one. Like, it's really based on important data. And when it's funny too, because we actually haven't even mentioned the content of an MTSS, which is good because it's a framework, right? And it can be applied across any content. Most often in schools, it is applied to either reading and or behavior, right? So the pyramid model or positive behavior intervention supports PBIS model is an MTSS model for behavior.
I didn't know that.
Oh,
I
really?
Didn't either. I didn't realize that.
But you guys know what PBIS is?
Yeah.
Ah, how funny. That's interesting. Yeah, so you most often see them kind of like you'll see this pyramid, you know, and you'll have literacy or reading on one side and you'll have behavior on the other. But those are MTSS frameworks, right? The trend right now is to really try to integrate all the content because academics is more than just literacy because you've got math, right? And you have social emotional development, which falls under the behavior side. So it's really the trend is to integrate these. So you have one MTSS team who looks at all of the data around individuals. And there's some really good reasons for that, because if you have two separate teams, you could be recommending interventions for the same kid that are contraindicated, right? Because, you know, if you intervene one way on behavior and a different way for something like reading, we could be interfering things with each other. And then resources, cost, all sorts of reasons to really integrate these into a single MTSS framework within a school. So
you've touched on this a little bit in terms of like what it is, but why should we care? Like, what is the purpose of MTSS? You've sort of touched on a couple of different things, but if you could say it succinctly for everybody who's listening, assuming they're a speech pathologist, what's the purpose of MTSS?
So I would say the primary purpose is to prevent later, more severe difficulties and disabilities, because we actually do have a lot of what we call dysteachia, where children may not get effective instruction early enough, and that leads to some sort of disability or
dysteachia.
A learning disability.
I love that. That's a good word.
So yeah, a lot of our kids do actually have dysteachia, but if we can intervene earlier on a prevention mechanism, we can prevent those later problems. And it's cost less, right? If you can intervene earlier, it costs less for the system. The other purpose would be to organize intensity of interventions and supports for individuals based on their individual needs, right? Some kids, like everybody needs core or like tier one instruction and tier one supports, right? But only some of those kids are going to need something more intensive or targeted. We call that tier two. But then there are going to be some who need something really intense, maybe at a tier three, right? But there's not a lot of, what's the right word? It's just an adjustment of the intensity of those things. And it's irrespective of a disability, right? And my guess is Doug's going to want to say something about this, because the former and they're probably still lingering in schools, mechanisms of identifying disabilities are not as valid as they could be, and as maybe a response to intervention process is. Sorry, Doug, I know I'm like totally dominating here.
No, it's perfect.
You have important things to say, so say it, man.
No, it's great. I did want to add just what you were just leading up to. In 2004, the new law, IDEA from 2004, it included this idea of RTI. It didn't say MTSS at the time, because as Trina mentioned, MTS is a larger umbrella, and RTI fits within that umbrella, response to intervention. But they brought it in as an alternative approach to identifying individuals who could qualify for services, for special services. And here's one of the major reasons why. You would have this scenario, and it's just an embarrassing scenario. You would have children who would get this IQ score or this cognitive score from a school psychologist of, let's say, 80, okay? So this child does not qualify for having an intellectual disability, right? But then they would also use this discrepancy model where they had to have a 15-point standard score difference between their cognition and their performance academically. So a child could be could have an IQ of 80, an IQ quote unquote of 80, and then their reading performance could be 70, a standard score of 70, which is two SDs below the mean. And based on that discrepancy model, that child would not qualify for special services. And so that's obviously a flaw in the system. So instead of this approach where it's just super dichotomous, instead, it's the idea that everybody receives a special education. Everyone receives the individualized instruction that they need, whether they have a disability or not, that's sort of irrelevant to the process. So, and this is all, and the Trina and I will lead into this, of course, but this is why we have adopted this MTSS approach so much, especially in the speech language pathology world, because there are so many students who need services, or at least the consultation or the knowledge from a speech language pathologist that would help them succeed, who do not have a language disorder or who wouldn't fall within those 13 classifications for services.
Well, and depending on your eligibility criteria, where you're working or where the student is attending school, they may have to wait a really long time to fail enough to get support, which is just so backwards. And some individuals might never fail enough, you guys can't see my air quotes, but fail enough to be eligible to receive services that would help you better access and learn while you're in school. I mean, it sounds like obviously this makes sense.
So one of the things that I think I would like to explicitly draw attention to is the concept of response to intervention. And part of that is because it's actually the same construct we talk about with dynamic assessment, right? These are very similar things where the construct is how well do they respond to good instruction, or how well did they learn, how modifiable they are, or their responsiveness, right? The different, and this construct, right? This construct of response to intervention is embedded in an MTSS framework, but it's really the more valid process for identifying disability, which is the reason why dynamic assessment is a more valid process for identifying or classifying disability. But the primary difference between a dynamic assessment and RTI is that you can do a dynamic assessment in a shorter amount of time. It's intended to be kind of like in a one or a shorter sitting, right? One or fewer sittings. Whereas RTI within an MTSS framework actually happens over time. It takes like three to maybe 6 months to make any determination about it. And it's longer if you're going to make a referral for a disability or determine some sort of eligibility. But it is the process by which we weed out the children who just have minor delays, right? And that can, you know, they can be remediated quickly. And those children who really and truly do have disabilities. And that's especially true and important for our culturally, linguistically, or economically disadvantaged kids, because they're often the ones that we cannot tell whether or not they have a speech or language disorder, because they're not, well, mostly a language disorder, because they're not speaking English as fluently as or proficiently as the other kids that the tests were normed for, right? So we need this kind of dynamic process of identifying or differentiating between disorder and language difference. And the RTI within MTSS does that the same way that dynamic assessment does it.
So before we sort of really get into the meat of how this affects the world of the SLP, I'm just thinking about, you know, people who are listening, I know education is varies significantly depending on where you are, where you live, where you work, what region of the country you're in. What is the landscape for how common finding MTSS and RTI like structures are? I'm having a hard time articulating my question, but what is the current state? Is there a standard? What's the current flavor out there for what people are seeing in the schools in terms of these frameworks?
So I think there's a pretty, sorry, Doug, you want to go first?
Well, all I was going to say is that there's kind of a lip service approach to MTSS, and then there's a true implementation of MTSS. And Trina and I were just kind of laughing about this before this meeting here, that people talk about sending a child to RTI, or this child got RTI for a couple of weeks and now it's time to do something real with this kid. Or they'll talk about doing MTSS, but not really talk about it as though it's a system. And it's supposed to be really an entire system that everyone participates in. And yes, that's happening in some places, but in other places not. But most, I think I could safely say that most places know what MTSS is, or at least have a general concept of what it is.
Yeah, I would agree with that. But if it is well installed, right? If you think about MTSS as an innovation, it has to go through an installation process, which takes several years to get to the point where it's being implemented with fidelity. And then it has to be maintained. And there's all sorts of system levers that have to be pushed at just the right time and just the right amounts to make sure that it's sustainable, which is a very challenging thing to do. And because it's such a large framework, it requires a lot of people and money and organization and really, really, you know, nice people who are knowledgeable about these things. But if it's going to be well installed, it's most likely installed well for decoding and for behavior problems. Those are the two most likely. Now, of course, we also have comprehension or listening comprehension and language that needs to have a more prominent presence in the MTSS systems. And I think most people recognize that their MTSS systems are a little weak on that front. And math, that's another one where some schools are doing a great job with math and some are not, right? There are fewer research studies, there are fewer assessment tools, there are fewer interventions for math. And so that's pretty much the landscape.
And when you're thinking about the team and sort of the team who are operating within the framework of MTSS, does that look different when you're looking at the different lenses through which you're applying that framework, right? Are there different people who have different levels of involvement? May you see, I don't know, some people kind of taking a more active role depending upon the topic? Can you talk a little bit about how that might look?
Sure. So like there's an MTSS team, there's some obligatory roles, right, to be in this team. Like you've got to have somebody who leads the meeting, somebody who creates the agenda, sends out the agenda. During the meetings, you need to have a timekeeper, a note taker, and you need to have a data specialist, somebody who like summarizes, captures all the data and presents it at the meeting, right? And then you also need to have your domain area or content specific experts. So you might have a decoding person. You might have a behavior analyst or a behavior specialist to be your behavior person. And this is where the SLP, right? If you've got schools who know what they're doing, they have their language person there as well, right? Because you actually do need the experts in all of those domains. You can't expect the behavior analyst to know enough about language to be able to do the prevention consultation work or the leadership work that's involved. So in some of the research that Doug and I have been doing, we've actually been helping to install an MTSS framework in which language is key and the SLP takes a leadership role.
And go ahead.
Well, I just was going to say, Amy, that I think that your question is really, of course, an important and interesting one to the speech language pathology community, who has this, generally speaking, very burdensome workload. At least that's how it was when I was in the schools. I had these large caseloads. And so the idea of taking on something else and, you know, what do you want me to do? You want me to do something else now in addition to taking care of all of these students, which by the way, of course I loved, but I'm thinking, wow, you want more on my shoulders. And so I think we do need to talk about that, right? About like what, when Trina says these speech language pathologists in these districts that we're working with are the lead, they're taking the lead in language. She's not suggesting that they're doing all of the tier two intervention or doing all of the universal screening or progress monitoring. No, instead, they're in a sense directing it though, because they are the content experts. They understand language assessment and they understand language intervention. And newsflash here, there is no one usually in a school district who understands language assessment or intervention better than a speech language pathologist. And so it not only makes sense that the SLP takes the lead, it is absolutely essential that the SLP at least take a consultative lead in those sorts of domains.
So one of the areas that I've actually been writing to SLPs about is the need for them to know more about what goes on in the classrooms. So SLPs are actually considered educators in the schools. We're talking about school-based SLPs, obviously. They're educators and they're actually responsible for all the kids in the building. Even though they have a caseload and they may be paid out of the special ed budget, the 2010 school-based SLP roles and responsibilities from ASHA specifies that there is a kind of a misalignment and that we need to kind of realign with what's going on in schools. And the laws and regulations suggest that they're supposed to be working on IEP goals and an intervention that is directly relevant to accessing the education and the gen ed curriculum. So there's a need for SLPs to be more knowledgeable about what happens in schools, right? So that they understand what the curriculum looks like, so that they could be working on academic language targets that are going to boost their literacy, math, science, social studies, performance, that kind of a thing. And I think I was going somewhere else with that.
Well, I can
take, what was I going to talk about?
I can take you somewhere with that. Not only do the SLPs need to know, of course, what their students are working on all day long in the school, they also need to be aware of the extent to which MTSS is implemented in the school and how well it is actually addressing, and I want to talk about language, right? How well it's addressing language. And I think that once SLPs look around a little bit outside of their closet and they see the way that children are being monitored for progress over time for language and the language supports that are being given to these students, it freaked me out. Okay.
I really know. I think they know.
I don't know about that.
That's not true. When we talk to SLPs, they go, oh, definitely, we got to be doing better with language comprehension than, you know, these oral reading fluency passages or these fluency things. They know, they have a sense of it. But here's the deal, though, is that they don't necessarily have something else that they can recommend. And so sometimes, and this is very, I mean, it's a little dated, but in 2006, Teresa Ukrainitz wrote an article. And by the way, Doug and I, like, we devoured this article in such a way that it was almost like a roadmap to us, right? Because in this 2006 article, she says that SLPs are not going to be able to take a prominent role in RTI systems. Back then, that's what they were calling it, right? Unless they have equivalent measures to the DIBLs, right? Which was the kind of like one of the primary general outcome measures that schools are using. And it's all code focus. It's, you know, decoding and it's in fluency. Unless we have something equivalent for language, SLPs don't have the right tools to participate in the MTSS system or to even guide regarding language. And as a matter of fact, I just read today an article that talked about, hey, we need to be, you know, screening language so that we can help these kids. And literally it said, we need to develop some because there aren't any. And I'm just like, okay.
Can I give you like a direct quote? Let's see if I can do this. Teresa Ukrainitz, 2006. It behooves the research community to develop a set of very brief progress monitoring tools akin to the dibbling used for code-based instruction, yet that also measures narrative syntax and vocabulary. I don't know, I might have butchered it a little bit, but that's what Teresa was talking about so long ago in an exchange with another researcher about, yeah, okay, SLPs need to be part of MTSS, but the only way it's going to happen is if they come to the table with solutions, not just saying, oh, we've got to do something about this language. Nobody's measuring it right. Nobody's treating it with multiple tiers. And so, yeah, that it, it's, and I have to say, Trina, that's, that hurts my heart though, to hear someone say, somebody needs to develop these things. Cause that's
what we've right?
15 years now.
I know. I mean, and just as a FYI, if you don't know, like Doug and I, we have a history, right? But we met in 2006. So it was like this article that kind of like, you know, crystallized our bond. We're like, we want to do this. Let's do this. And we've spent the last, 12, 13, 14 years developing the tools so that SLPs can play the role that they deserve to have and that the schools need them to have, right? If they think about it, if an SLP withholds their knowledge and expertise from all those kids in that school, right, they're not going to benefit from it. And that makes me sad, right? And a certain, and mostly because like it's such a valuable expertise, these kids need it. And the teachers need to understand how important language is. And it needs to be integrated into the school's framework for MTSS, not developing their own. They don't have to do MTSS on their own. Right? But language needs to be a more critical feature of the school's literacy MTSS so that it is in balance with code.
Well, and Kate and I, our listeners know, sorry, Kate, I saw you jumping and then I'm just bad at being a talker on the Zoom. But, you know, we talk a lot about the importance of indirect service. And I think, and just being, you know, being confident as a speech language pathologist in your expertise and using your role, you know, in the context of a school to educate all of those around you about what you can bring to the table, what your expertise is, help share that information. Like you were saying, Trina, you know, with your colleagues, you bring really helpful knowledge and skills to the table. And that's important to kind of do some, as uncomfortable as it can be, you know, like do a little bit of PR for yourself and help educate your colleagues about what you know and how you can be helpful. Educate your administration about what you know and how you can be helpful. And also advocate for, you know, kind of to Doug's earlier point, which I think is incredibly and sadly true, but, you know, our caseloads in a lot of places are very unmanageable. And I think that that's something that we need to continue advocating for as a profession to enable us to take these really essential roles in being part of the school community and serving the students in the way that we're supposed to be serving them.
Amy, I agree 100%. SLPs can advocate for themselves and educate others in the building, but I'm going to say that it's going to go over better if they also educate themselves about what the teacher's job is and what
oh,
the
a thousand
academic
percent.
Standards are. If they know the standards that that state has, whether they're like core knowledge standards or some state standards, they're going to have more credibility with the teachers and they're going to be seen as more helpful if the SLP can actually help the job of the teacher be a little bit easier, right? So I think that that's a, it's like a reciprocal kind of.
It's completely reciprocal. I agree completely with all the things that you just said. And I think, you know, unique challenge for the speech language pathologist as opposed to the grade level teacher is that, you know, in many schools, you know, perhaps if you're working in elementary school, you may be needing to know the grade level standards for kindergarten through fifth or sixth grade. And so I think that's a wonderful opportunity to legitimately and genuinely reach out to your colleagues and say, hey, I am really trying to get up to speed on the curriculum frameworks and I'm serving students, you know, across all of these grade bands, can you please help me know, you know, the core competencies for your classroom? And even just having an ongoing dialogue about what's happening next in the classroom and what their next goals are. I completely agree. It's a very much reciprocal communication.
When they see that, when they recognize what the core curriculum is, what it is that the standards are, SLPs can even better understand how they fit within that curriculum. And they will recognize their role immediately. Right? These things that SLPs know so much about that have very specialized training in, those are the very things that the students need to know. And in some cases, and this is really strange to me, but in some cases, the SLP is really the only person in the entire district who knows or who's had specific education on some of those things, right? And I know I already mentioned this, but I mean, really, when it comes to assessing language, and doing language instruction or language intervention, there are very few people who have had specific courses on that topic. And so the SLP can hold their head high and recognize just how much they know about language. And if they looked around and asked teachers or other educators what they knew about language, they would realize, oh, maybe my language skills as an SLP are a little rusty, or maybe I don't know that much, but I know a lot more than my colleagues because I've had education in it. I've had courses in it.
So I want to take a second to just sort of, because I mean, if I'm all being honest here, y'all are speaking slightly up outside of my like knowledge base here. And I'm in awe of all of this information. And I want to take a second to break it down a little bit into, so thinking of someone who might be listening, they have a caseload of 140, they're completely overwhelmed, they're in a district that doesn't necessarily already embrace, but they're listening, they're like, yes, this needs to happen. How can I affect change in my, you know, actual setting? What are some of the action? I mean, I know there's lots of components of it, what kinds of assessments they need, all those kinds of things, but what are the actionable steps that you would recommend someone do when they are listening to this, understanding how important it is, how important their role is, but feel like there are a lot of hurdles?
So can I just sort of build a little bit of a context, just a tiny bit more, and then Trina, you can sort of tackle that question. But I think the very first thing would be for the SLP and the entire education system to understand just how much there is a need for MTSS for language. And I know we're talking about language, and there's many other ways you can apply it. But like if you took a look at the National Assessment of Education Progress results, and this is an assessment that administered to thousands of children across the country every year, every couple of years, if you looked at the results, you would see that 80% of culturally and linguistically diverse students do not meet grade level benchmark expectations. And you would find that just the general population, you've got about 55-60% that are not meeting this proficient level of reading at fourth grade and at 12th grade and at eighth grade. So that kind of information right there might make a speech language pathologist think, oh, this is a reading problem. And their mind might go to this idea of decoding, like, oh, this is a decoding issue, right? This is reading. But this assessment measures the child's ability to understand what they read. And we know that a lot of these children who are struggling on this assessment are not struggling because of decoding or exclusively because of decoding. We know that there are comprehension factors at play. And reading comprehension is absolutely related to someone's language skill, to their ability to understand language. And we don't have time to get into that, of course. That could get deep and awesome. But when an SLP recognizes, though, that probably the majority of the children not meeting grade level reading expectations are struggling with language, complex academic language comprehension, then their role immediately becomes clear. Oh, we have to help all of these kids, the vast majority in the entire school district, improve their ability to understand complex academic language. Written, oral, doesn't matter. The modality, it doesn't really matter. It's all about this foundation of language. Okay, Trina, sorry.
All right, that was great. It's so true. And they do, I agree with Doug that that's the kicker right there. And the more people, more professionals in that school building that understand that language is the foundation, so listening and speaking is the foundation for reading and writing, the more involved, the more empowered that SLP is going to be, right? And the more they're going to rely on that SLP, because they're going to realize, oh great, none of us are experts in this, even though they all want to be, right? They really don't have the depth of knowledge. And I think to Kate's question, I want to provide some advice about how to approach it. If they're just new, like you just can't walk in and say, well, I'm the expert in language, because nobody else in that building will see it as a language thing, right? They see it as literacy or reading or something else. They don't understand that listening and speaking are the foundation for reading and writing. And so you almost have to speak their language, right? Which is what I'm saying, is get to know what's going on in their curriculum, in their building, what their kind of mandates are, and then go, oh, look, this right here, this is something that I do quite a bit, right? So it's about attaching the things that you can do using their terms and their understanding. So one way to approach it is like this. In 2000, the National Reading Panel identified 5 areas of literacy instruction. And most of the teachers, administrators, school psychologists will know these as the big 5. They include phonemic awareness, phonics, fluency, vocabulary, and comprehension. In MTSS systems, they generally have sufficient assessment tools to screen and progress monitor, and instruction and interventions for phonemic awareness, phonics, and fluency, but not for vocabulary and comprehension. So if you come to your administrator or your school psychology colleague, or even the teacher that you're good friends with, and say, you know, I'm just curious what our building is doing for vocabulary and comprehension in MTSS. And if they go, well, actually, it's a huge need. A lot of our kids are not understanding, but we don't really have any good, you know, we're not really measuring it either, right? We're waiting for the state tests at third grade, right? Or, you know, we don't really have good measures for these things. So we don't have, you know, whatever. Soon as they identify the problem, you're like, well, maybe I could help with that. You know, that's the place that you can. Vocabulary and comprehension, they don't screen language to them, but they will to you. And so that's where you're in is, right?
And this is where, but this is where things usually end. It's like, oh yeah, I know about language comprehension and I know about assessment of language, but then they have to fit that knowledge within the framework of MTSS, which requires that you are monitoring the progress of thousands of children. And you're not gonna sit there and take this language sample and transcribe it, segment it into C units and analyze, you know, the language of thousands and thousands of children. And so what you need then, of course, are tools that are incredibly efficient, yet at the same time maintain validity for monitoring progress over time. And you need systems of support. You need tiers of intervention that teachers can use and that paraprofessionals can use to help improve oral language so that it's not on the SLP shoulders exclusively.
So there, to be able to do that, right, to be able to, you know, screen and monitor children's vocabulary and comprehension, you have to have good assessment tools, and there's certain criteria for them. And the school psychologist, the administrator, they're gonna know what those criteria are, right? And I'm just gonna tell you what they are really quickly, okay? You have to measure something socially and academically important. It has to be quick and easy to do. It has to have high reliability and validity, right? And the assessment tool has to have multiple forms so that you could do repeated assessment over time, okay?
And easy to administer, easy to score, cost-effective, those factors as well.
So I don't mean to make a shameless plug here, but that is actually what Doug and I have been working on for the last, you know, 13 years, is developing the assessment tool that Teresa Ukrainitz said we needed so that we could work on language in schools. And, you know, it's actually free. So I don't feel that bad about, you know, about telling you about it. It's at the languagedynamicsgroup.com website, and it's free, and it's part of the cubed assessment suite, which includes the narrative language measures, listening, and a narrative language measures reading, so that you can measure comprehension.
I'm not letting Amy or Kate say a thing. I just wanted to say okay. One thing. I'm sorry. In this case, I like to think that free does not mean that Trina and I in the basement somewhere made this up in like a couple of days and threw it on the website, right? This is really something we've been working on for a long, long time. And we have data for this particular assessment from thousands of children. And I'm not saying it's perfect or anything like that, but we have a lot of psychometric data, and it does indicate that it meets those very things that Trina just outlined that it needs to meet to work in an MTSS process.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And there are many schools across the country who are using it for exactly that purpose. And sometimes they got introduced to the school system by the SLP. right? It's the SLPs who recognize that language needed to happen. And so to Kate's question again, what are the actionable steps? What I would recommend is for the SLP to start using the assessment tool for their own caseload, right? And slowly see if they could get like a kindergarten teacher or a first grade teacher to say, hey, would you like to try this assessment with me? I've been using it for my kids, but I think it'll be really helpful for you too to identify or to monitor the comprehension of your kids even before they're reading, right? And that's really powerful because a lot of teachers want to know what their kids are comprehending. They want to know that information and have an idea of like, are they understanding? You know, what's their potential? What's the chance that they're going to be reading on grade level at third grade? Well, it's not, it doesn't have that much to do with how fast they decode. It's how well they are comprehending, but there really aren't other measures to predict that. So it's really, it's a great segue to bring it in and then expand within your building.
And I have to say, not for this, I mean, I know this is very redundant, but everything that everyone is saying, thank you for letting me speak, by the way, is completely related to the need for indirect service. I mean, all of this collaboration, even if you have indirect service in your grid for another student and you've just developed a relationship with that teacher, but from another student, that's totally unrelated. That relationship and collaborate and learning from each other in that context can play a role here. And we say it every episode. I'm just saying it again, just for the sake of it, because hopefully somebody out there is going to start doing something about it. If we say it enough, I don't know.
Mm-hmm. Well, many of the school districts that are using our assessment and intervention tools in their MTSS frameworks, the SLPs do not deliver all the intervention and they do not do all of the assessments, right? There are paraprofessionals in the building. There are literacy specialists who do it. And I do know of some of them who put their SLPAs to work in this regard, right? So they have assistants that actually help the teachers do kind of universal screening, fall, winter, spring. They kind of crunch the data, push it back out to the gen ed teachers so that they go, oh, well, these kids and these kids, we can put those kids together for a language group. And these kids, we can put them together for a decoding group, right? So our tools have been created based on the simple view of reading so that as early as preschool, actually, you can put kids into literacy focused, right? You know, either decoding or language intervention groups in an MTSS framework. Doesn't have to be in an MTSS framework, but they're designed to meet the criteria needed for those, for that system.
And if you guys, if the listeners are also interested, like I am, in checking out this free tool that's available to us, we will have the website up on our page.
Correct. We will put links to it in the show notes too. So people can just, you know, zip through their phones, yeah. Lickety split.
So if you're driving and listening or washing dishes and listening, don't worry. Just go to the website.
We got you covered.
Yeah. Well, sorry, Doug, do you want to say something about, I think we'll talk more about the assessment tool in another podcast too, or at least assessments like that. Sorry, Doug, you were going to say something.
No, and I didn't want to get any deeper into that because you're right. We're going to talk hopefully more about this later, about the specifics of it. One of the things that I just sort of like, if you know my personality, I'm like, oh, I don't know about this idea of the SLP doing it and then maybe finding one teacher who will do it along with them. I mean, don't get me wrong, that's a great idea, but I sort of feel like the SLP has such a huge piece of the puzzle here of helping to identify future difficulty with reading comprehension and to prevent that from happening. I just feel like it's almost selfish to hold it in and not share it with everyone. But I recognize that change takes time. And sometimes I just don't understand why it takes so much time. Why could you not go to the school district administrators and say, hey guys, we have some electricity here. You might want to try this instead of a candle, you know? Or why would you just share the electricity with the one teacher? I don't get that. And I mean, I know that sounds very self-serving, but when it comes right to it, this is the reality of it though. We are talking about a piece of the puzzle that is totally missing or very poorly represented where SLPs actually have the answer.
So while I totally agree with you, in the work in implementation science, it just doesn't happen that way, right? It just doesn't. Yeah. You have to have a champion, and it has to start small, and they need to see results and let data and child progress kind of go. Let people notice it. Whoa, wait, what's happened over there? Wait, you have data on this, right? So even if the SLP has to do the assessment for 5 kids in that kindergarten class, and then she gives that data to the kindergarten teacher, that kindergarten teacher is going to want to know more, right? But if she walks into the classroom and says, you guys need to be doing this, or to the administrator, you need to be doing this, all that administrator people are going to be doing is like, no, we can't do another thing, right? There's too much on our plate already, right? They have to see they have to see the investment paying off and be motivated to ask for more information.
Right, large ships turn slowly.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yes.
My friend Kate, who I worked with on MTSS in the elementary school, she would always say, we go slow to go fast. We go slow to go fast. And I'm like, I get it. Mm-hmm. I'm not very patient, and neither is Doug. He's really pissed right now.
Well, I love it though. We had David Luderman on once, and his quote, one of my favorite quotes from him was that angry people make change. And I think that that's very true. So I support your fire. I think that that's great. I did want to ask though, so we've talked a lot about how language is included in MTSS for literacy. Are there other ways or other reasons why language needs to be included in MTSS? Is it related to speech? Like, can you tell us a little bit more about that, like additional aspects of it?
Yeah, yes. So you're looking at me. I can do that. Well, absolutely, of course. So, I don't know why we keep plugging Teresa Ukrainitz here. So Teresa did this study in the state of Wyoming, and she went around and asked SLPs what they thought about language and the role that language played in education. And it eventually boiled down to this idea that language is like everything. Language is the foundation for so many things, including children's ability to navigate math problems and to be successful in that area. And then of course, talk about writing. It's amazing to me that people think that writing is some sort of disconnected thing from your expressive language, from the language that you can produce. I mean, the connection between the two is so incredibly tight, right? And those people who have strong oral language skills are the very people who can write in a strong manner as well, in a clear way. So the relationship there is super strong.
I'd imagine too that it trickles out into every other subject. I mean, just thinking about science and, you know, back to what the points you guys were making earlier about, you know, the 5 key areas of literacy. And when we think about comprehension and we think about vocabulary, like those things come in. If you don't have the vocabulary, how are you going to fully access and participate in the science lesson? You're not, because you're still trying to catch up to the basic concepts that you need to access. I mean, I think you guys have talked a lot about younger students, and I don't know what your thoughts are about applying MTSS, you know, kind of later, but at some point you sort of do shift from that learning to read to reading to learn. And I'd imagine that MTSS is important and relevant kind of throughout the school timeline. I don't know if you guys have thoughts about that. Is it more of an elementary school thing?
So I'll tell you, I have a bit of a bias about it. Of course, MTSS is an organizational framework, and it works to organize the differentiated instruction. And that applies in middle school, high school, the whole nine yards, right? But in middle school, it's no longer a prevention system. Do you see what I mean? That was the second purpose of an MTSS, is to prevent. But if we're giving tier 2 and tier 3 interventions in middle school, no, we're kind of past the prevention. You know, we should have been taking care of those things much earlier than that. And so to me, that feels more remediation. And so my bias is that I always want to put my efforts into the area that's going to have the biggest bang for their buck. So I'm going to put it into the early years. And in fact, when children are in primary years, like kindergarten, first and second grade, their oral language develops rapidly, much more rapidly during those years. They acquire more vocabulary words, more, linguistic capabilities in those years than any other grade level. And so it makes most sense to do that right there. Now, that doesn't mean that middle schoolers and high schoolers don't need academic language, but you can do it at that point through the reading comprehension side versus a listening comprehension, as long as they have code established, right? And there are some really great researchers who work in that arena, and they're doing some great work. Academic language is often I think it's more commonly thought of as something that you do later with children, but not us. We think it's critical early, right? I don't know.
Thank you. That was helpful.
So I guess I really just want to say is, like, since 2006, Doug and I have been working diligently to kind of like plug all the holes in the MTSS and make sure that the SLP's expertise is appreciated and recognized in the school systems, and that they have the proper tools to be able to participate at the level they should be. And then I would say it aligns with the ASHA's recommendations for role realignment, that they do have roles and responsibilities with prevention, intervention, and assessment. That doesn't mean they have to be all of those things at the same time, but that they do have a responsibility to all the students in the building that they serve, just like all the other educators do. Like, they all share that responsibility. And we've seen some really great work. Sometimes we're involved and sometimes we're not, but sometimes people will use our assessment tools or our intervention tools and then tell us about it. So for example, there's a really great article that came out, I think August in ASHA Leader, August 2020. And it was one school district's process of converting their caseload model to a workload model. And they were using MTSS for language to do that. And so, it's not a key part of their article in ASHA Leader, but they did use our assessment tools and our intervention tools to kind of, steer that ship the other way. And what they found was that more kids were reading or scoring on grade level, and they had fewer referrals over time. And so what happened is the SLPs were able to do more prevention work, and they had fewer kids on their caseload, or they had more time to do it because they had fewer evals. So to me, that's pretty powerful. It takes a little bit of time, right? Some concentrated, system people, some great leaders, but it's doable. And certainly Doug and I have been working rapidly to make sure the SLPs have the tools they need to take proper part in moving their systems to MTSS and workload model.
And that makes a lot of sense, right? If the features of MTSS that you guys have described are operating as like at an optimal level, you would think you'd see fewer referrals because there would be more students who are getting what they need, and what they need might not be a referral. I mean, I think I'd be surprised if there are any SLPs listening who haven't received referrals and they're like, oh, this is an inappropriate referral, this kid didn't qualify. Like, so I think that that's a really important point to make as somebody who is, workload focused. I think everybody's trying to have a work-life balance. And when you think about the amount of time and effort that evaluations take, it seems like such a better use of an SLP's knowledge and skills to be putting that time and energy toward helping people right away, rather than like kind of stepping through an administrative process that's going to result in somebody not receiving the supports that perhaps they need or don't need anyway.
Right. Mm-hmm. And I just want to emphasize something. Amy, you said that children learn to read and then they read to learn. And I mean, that's very true, of course, but people often think that that means that all you do is focus on decoding or code-based instruction in the early grades. And then once they've got that established, then you can switch over and start worrying about comprehension. And that's actually not true at all. If you understand that oral language comprehension is equivalent or nearly equivalent to reading comprehension, and so you can start working on comprehension with a preschooler simultaneously, not in replacement, not to remove decoding, but at the same time, right? And that is preventative.
Sorry, Doug, I really want to say this. Good job. And now my turn.
I haven't given you enough time yet. I'm sorry.
I know we're so terrible. It's just, this is just such a fun, like exciting topic because I want more SLPs to know, right? So I was going to say that you can also build knowledge as young as 3 years old through a listening format, right? We don't have to wait until they're reading to learn. They can listen to learn, and that it transfers, you know, across oral and written modalities. So we should be emphasizing knowledge acquisition through listening and speaking very intensely, right? At least at the same intensity as we work on the code in those, you know, young grades.
I think those are such good points. And like, also, that's part of where the fun of reading comes in. Like reading isn't just this discrete set of skills that is like decoding. It's also, that's part of what makes it enjoyable. So just from sort of a, I don't know, buy-in standpoint, like it's part of what makes reading fun.
Well, I know that we could probably talk about this for another many hours, but the good news is that you're coming back to talk about this for many more hours. So that's great news. Is there anything else that you want to leave our listeners with before we wrap up? I can see you both like you want to say so many more words. You're like, I have to choose them very carefully.
I just want to encourage SLPs to just recognize how important they are in the school system, in the larger system. And I feel like I am always talking about how SLPs have so much to offer everyone else, but I do want that to be reciprocal, and I don't mean it that way, right? I mean, SLPs can learn so much from everyone around them as well. But I just feel like it's really crucial for us to understand what we know and how much what we know can change the system for the better in a big way.
I think my final message is that we want SLPs to know that it's really not simple, right? We talk about it maybe that it's simple because we've been working in this arena for 13 years and we've seen it happen, but man, it's taken a lot of work. And, you know, we know it's not simple, but it's worth doing. And I think over time, it will get better and easier. And I think it's definitely worth it because we can improve the workload balance and prevent, you know, some children from suffering some disabilities or missing out on educational opportunities. And that's what we're there for. And I really do not want SLPs to think that MTSS or RTI does not apply to them. That's my biggest message, is it does apply to them. It's just how willing they are to take part and to advocate for a manageable role.
And for everybody who has listened to this and you're still with us and you're interested in becoming more familiar with the CUBED assessment, which is the free assessment that they've referenced multiple times, you can find more information about that at Language Dynamics Group, which is languagedynamicsgroup.com. We will also have links for it in our show notes. We will have references and additional links on our website, on the episode page, if you are wanting to find more information about anything that we talked about today. You can also email us anytime. So thank you so much for joining us, everyone. If you have a moment, please consider leaving us a review or sending us a note, finding us on social media. Again, you can use this episode for ASHA CEUs, and we are so glad everybody joined us today. Thanks for coming, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Thank you.
Thanks.